See, what we have with the new evangelization is a lot of people sitting there in the pews who I think were on the verge of losing because they don't know why they care anymore. They don't know why they're there. So they really need the hook. They need to be interiorly awakened.
Welcome to Faith and Culture, a production of the Augustine Institute. Every week, we explore the glory of the Catholic faith and the beauty of Catholic culture. And now, here's the host of Faith and Culture, Joseph Pierce.
Hello, welcome to Faith and Culture podcast. I'm Joseph Pierce, and I'm very pleased to have back on the podcast a good friend of the Augustine Institute and becoming a very good friend of mine. Now I'm getting to know him, Chris Stefanik. Chris, it's good to have you back.
Good to be back, brother.
Well, we discussed last time your own conversion story and the beginnings of your ministry. Now you really are one of the most dynamic evangelists out there, and one of the things you're doing is Reboot Live. Can you tell us what Reboot Live is?
A parish renewal event that focuses on all ages. I'd say multi-generational. You know, so I'll have kids sitting there with their parents and grandparents. You know, I love when you're talking to the whole family.
Yeah.
When the kid is moved, their parents are more open to conversion.
Yeah.
When the parents are moved and being brought closer to the Lord, the conversion of the kid's going to stick.
Yeah.
You know, so going around doing these multi-generational events that focus on the basic kerygma, the basic gospel message, and an invitation to receive a new relationship with Jesus Christ and to live that out every day. And every week around the country doing that somewhere. But the real secret sauce of this event, in addition to that dynamic call to Jesus, we're working with parishes for 6 months leading up to the event to personally coach outreach teams so that they invite their whole community back to the church. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing small towns get 1,000 people at this, which blows my mind.
Yeah.
And the other day I had a pastor tell me, he said, 70% of the people here I don't usually see at church.
Wow.
So it's really a back to basics, evangelization 101, and so in some ways kind of a Billy Graham crusade for Catholics.
Right. Now, you say Catholic evangelization 101.
Yep.
What does that actually entail? I mean, what are the basics we have to get back to?
Yeah. You know, we're this great quote from Pope Francis. He said, we're in the midst of a love story. And if we don't understand it, we've understood nothing what the church is. It's kind of like marriage if you forget the love story. You find yourself asking, what the heck am I doing?
Right.
You know, I've given up my closet space, my time, my money to the kids who suck all the life out of me and the finances out of me. And you need to go on a date.
Right.
To push all the distractions away.
Right.
On a regular basis and be reminded, oh, this is why we're doing this, because we met and we fell in love, and that's why I gave myself to you. So frankly, all the other stuff that comes along with it, the rules of marriage that I have to follow, the rituals that come along with marriage that I have to give my time to, they become a joy at best, or at worst, bearable,
right?
Because I keep why I'm doing this in mind.
Yes.
And I think as a church, we often forget why we're doing this.
Right.
You know, and the world, the society at large has certainly forgotten why we're doing this. You know, you ask the average person what they associate the Catholic Church with. No one's going to say, oh, that's the Church of the Gospel of Jesus Christ.
No.
That's the Church of the Love Story. That's the Church of the Best News Ever.
Right.
That's the only context wherein the rest of what we offer the world makes sense.
Now, let me say something here, because you're obviously doing something. We're obviously both trying to spread the gospel in our own different ways, and they are different ways, but the same goal. Ronald Knox, Monsignor Ronald Knox, said there are two types of Catholics. He said there's the hooks and the crooks, as in the hooks of the fisherman, the crooks of the shepherd. Mm-hmm. Now, you're an evangelist. Your mission seems to be mostly with those who, at least in theory, are Catholics, right, to one degree or another.
Yeah.
So would you describe yourself, using Monsignor Knox's terminology, as as a crook, one whose principal vocation is with the fold, with the flock, to keep them, you know, in the church or bring them back to the church? Or do you see yourself as a fisherman who's trying to bring in the postmodern atheist agnostics, etc.?
That's a funny question. I mean, it's a great question, right? But we live in a funny world right now.
Right.
See, what we have with the new evangelization is a lot of people sitting there in the pews who I think we're on the verge of losing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because they don't know why they care anymore. They right. don't know why they should care. They don't know why they're there.
They're going through the motions, basically. Yeah.
So they really need the hook.
Yeah.
You know, they need to be interiorly awakened.
I'm glad I asked that question. It's a good answer.
Yeah, that's a great question.
Yeah.
They need to be awakened from within. So you find people that are going every Sunday, people who have been sacramentalized.
Right.
But have not been evangelized.
Right.
I had my cousin went to Reboot recently when I was back in New Jersey. He had gotten all his sacraments. He got into Catholic school, elementary, high school, and college. And after the event, he said, I had never before thought of Catholicism as having to do with my relationship with God.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, yeah. No, I know. I sometimes come across, and this is one of the favorite things my wife sort of draws attention to, when you talk to someone who's a Catholic, or used to be a Catholic, former Catholic, you know, a lapsed Catholic, and they just say to you, you can't teach me anything. I was an altar server for 2 years. As if, you know, I did right. that, therefore I know all there is to know about the faith. Been there, done that,
right.
forget it.
Yeah.
Right. So you're right. So these people really, in one sense, they're inside, in the sense, as you say, they have been sacramentalized, and mm-hmm. technically they're Catholics. But really, de facto, if not de jure, right, they're on the outside. They need evangelization. They need bringing back in. So it's not that different in actual fact from someone who's never been churched, shall we say.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, throughout the history of the church, most of the history of the church, we had Christian cultures where the cultural norms kept them going. And those norms have been removed now.
Yeah.
Well, there's no cultural norms anymore.
Right.
You know, I could sit here and decide that I'm gender fluid, and right now I'm a woman, right? I mean, so what? So there's no norms keeping people in line yeah. at all. And I think there was a goodness to those norms because you live within those, and then you discover the truth, and you right. can fall in love with it as you do the right thing. But those being gone, especially with millennials,
yes.
if they don't come to find it, they're still waiting there. They're still coming. They're still sitting in our pews for now.
Yeah.
If we don't make the case within the next 20, 30 years,
right.
I think that a sense of obligation or nostalgia won't drive them back to the pews like they did for their parents and grandparents.
Right.
So we're at a prime time in the church where we either come back to first things and remind people where all this Catholic stuff came from in the first place, which is that God touched down, gave his life for us, caused us to give our lives back to him. We have to make a decision for that. We have to strive to live in that relationship every day. Oh, and by the way, here's how. All this beautiful Catholic stuff.
Right.
We either succeed at rebranding ourselves as the church that brings that to the world, right. or I think we're going to have a rude awakening.
But I mean, I'm an old man, feeling older by the year. I'm certainly not a millennial by any any stretch of the imagination. Obviously, you work with millennials an awful lot, and it seems to me that millennials. One of the problems is that they're addicted to technology. In other words, I wrote an article once called Distracting Ourselves to Death. Yeah. I mean, how do you engage with the fact that with the millennial generation, we're dealing with people that are actually, you know, wired into social media all the time, and to what extent does that affect their ability to actually have authentic, concrete, enfleshed relationships?
Well, so there's a lack of authentic relationships, but there's a lack of contemplation.
Right.
Imagination, dreaming is almost gone. I had a friend who was trying to teach a group of youth how to do Ignatian prayer and how to engage Scripture and imagine things. And a young person actually asked him, "How do I imagine?"
Right.
I mean, as soon as the mind goes silent, they pick up their phone.
Yes, exactly. I mean, I think the people listening to the podcast probably have some idea that I've been to prison. But in prison, solitary confinement for most prisoners is the worst thing you can give them. Mm-hmm. And they start scraping the walls. You know, if you like to read or write, which I did, just having that time to yourself was a blessing.
Now that you're a dad, I'm sure there's times you long for solitary confinement.
Exactly. A bit more solitary would be perfect for me now. But you're completely correct. That's a wonderful answer, that the problem is distraction, that we no longer have attention spans. And I think part of the problem is whether something such as reading engages the imagination, because you're working with images. I was talking with Paul McCusker recently when discussing this, that you're working with images, that every word is an abstract concept you have to process in your mind and do things with, and your imagination has to work with the page. Right. No, with film media or those sort of visual media, it's all passive and subliminal. Right, yeah. You don't have to engage. There is no imagination involved because it's all being presented to you. How do we deal with that? How do we cope with that? I mean, you're on the front line of this issue.
Well, I think, and also, in a post-Christian world, defaulting to constant distraction makes a lot of sense.
Right.
Because, as they fail to grasp the faith, they fail to grasp the meaning of life.
Right.
I mean, that's the something that we're bringing to people again.
Yeah.
And a life that's meaningless is doomed to distraction.
Yeah.
2,000 years ago, it wasn't the iPhone, but it was orgies in Rome.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
You had to be distracted by something.
Right.
If life is a story about nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the sad thing is, you say that these if they're unplugged for a moment, they find themselves in a hideous vacuum.
Yeah.
It's like a scream in a vacuum.
Yeah.
So what do you do? And of course, there are two things you can do: distract yourself again.
Yep.
And just continue to be addicted.
Pick up the phone again.
To being plugged in, exactly. Mm-hmm. Or you start wondering what it's all about, what the meaning of life is, etc. So. But
people want life with meaning. People want that, when you point out that there is a vacuum here. The Centers for Disease Control found that 15-17% of U.S. teens have contemplated suicide. A study in Great Britain recently found that 22% of teenage girls thought of taking their lives. And sometimes it's chemical imbalances and stuff. But I think of a quarter of a population in a prosperous country is not all chemical imbalances.
Right.
That there's a complete emptiness. There's a void where there should be the story.
Yeah.
The story that only we bring. So I think the ultimate answer to every problem in history, it's the same thing that changed hearts 2,000 years ago. It's the same thing that, I feel spoiled, because every single week we go to these events, see people who are invited, hear a charismatic gospel message, and you could literally see hope returning to their eyes.
Yeah.
To where hopefully it might take many years to learn the art of contemplation again, but at least they won't feel like they need to pick up their phone to be distracted from the nothing.
Right.
Looming.
And if they have the time, then that's the space to contemplate. And so I love that, because you are on the front line. So you mentioned you see in their eyes, right?
Oh,
so you're on the front line. You're looking people in the eye. You're seeing the response. One thing, maybe just to wrap up this particular interview, and we'll come back for more, hopefully more and more and more, is... we live in a culture, this sort of radical relativist culture, where it's all about self-esteem, which perhaps in a more mundane theological sense we might just call pride, but it's all about self-esteem. But of course, in one sense, we do need self-esteem. Could you perhaps address how you address that issue of, that Christ calls us to have a different sort of self-esteem to what the modern culture does?
Oh, and I'll tell you, man, what the modern culture is proposing to young people is not working.
Yeah.
A disturbing amount of them just want to end their lives.
Yes.
We have never told young people more frequently that they should love themselves and believe in themselves.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, young and old right now, I don't think we've lived in a more self-loathing time in history, because we failed to tell them why they should like themselves.
Right.
Why they should care about their lives at all. I was debating with a guy outside of a bar after a Theology on Tap, which was Bishop Connolly talked about pro-life issues, and this guy was heckling him. So, of course, my wife went right up to the guy afterwards, because she wanted to see if I could fight, But we got in a long discussion about abortion, and toward the end he said, I think my mom should have aborted me.
Wow.
And it struck me, you know, again, outside the context of the gospel message, wow, no moral issue makes any sense at all.
Yeah.
I mean, how could a person who doesn't think he should exist be convinced that a fetus matters?
Yeah.
Or that anything matters at all?
Yeah.
We don't tell this generation why they matter.
Right.
So they all feel expendable. They could have all been aborted. They can all be outsourced,
right,
and they just don't matter at all. The answer is back in the gospel message. We learn who we are by looking at our Father, just like children learn who they are by looking at their parents.
Yeah.
I'm precious. I'm worth dying for. This is what changed the world 2,000 years ago. This is what started a culture of life, where people know they matter and that the poor matters, and that they started the hospital system, started the university system, started all this Christian culture. Came from that central message, like the universe came from the Big Bang.
Yeah, marvelous.
Boom, there it is.
Chris Stefanik, you are a blessing, and it's been a blessing to have you on the Faith and Culture podcast, and we really must do it again soon.
Please.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, man.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Faith and Culture with Joseph Pierce. Faith and Culture is a production of the Augustine Institute. For more information, please visit us at faithandculture.com.